It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to 2018 and to episode 311 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening. This week, I have the great pleasure of kicking off a new year by talking to one of my favorite guests, and that's Jeff Kauffman, the creator of many comics, and has a wonderful book coming out about 9/11 in just a few weeks. We talk about how the book came to be and some really interesting graphic design that they put into it, as well as a fascinating story that's going to hit home, I think, with a lot of us. So I'm going to be interested to see how folks like it as it comes out before long. He's also got another book called Killing Mars, which follows up a story that he's told in the past, something that's very unusual for him. And he has some other comics coming out as well through Big City Studios. So we're going to try to catch up on all those good things as we start a new year. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. For the first interview of 2018, I'm glad to welcome back Jeff Kauffman, creator of many such good things as a new 9/11 book that's coming out soon, and Scary Fails, Killing Mars, Horror, which is one that you're probably known for. How are you doing today, Jeff?
I'm doing really good. First, it's weird. First technical business day because I had off yesterday. So yesterday was a do-nothing day, but today... Yeah. I guess I had to go back to work.
Yeah, well, all of us pretty much had to start doing something today. So this is, we're recording, by the way, for those listening. Usually these come out on Sunday, but this is the day after New Year's we're recording. So just so you know, and I thought we would go ahead. I saw you at the Acme comic shop up in Longwood, Florida, and I talked about the fact we hadn't talked for a while. So I thought now would be a good time to catch up on the projects you're working on currently and you've got coming out.
Yeah, it's really weird. I forget, you know, time flies in this business where you see people like once every 3 or 4 years and it's like when you see each other, it's like no time passed. Mm-hmm. But then we were talking and I realized that I hadn't talked to you for about 4 books ago.
Right.
You know,
right.
So that was weird because I realized the last book you had read of mine was so long ago and years pass.
Yeah, well, that's the trick about all these things. That's why it's good to catch up every so often. So I thought, what better way to start out the year than to talk with you about some stuff? Why don't we start talking about the one that you were mentioning to me that you really want to talk about was the 9/11.
Our 9/11 book actually ships in 2 weeks through Diamond. Mm-hmm. It's about a hero and a villain who had people in the towers when they went down. The hero becomes a villain, the villain becomes a hero.
Mm-hmm. Now, Snowflake is the name of the girl?
Yeah, Snowflake and Driver. It was a tough book. I've been wanting to do it for about 10 years, but, you know, knowing that it's not something you would normally do, it kept getting bumped and bumped and bumped. And finally, I had a quick window and was able to fit it in, which, you know, it was a really big deal for me to get this book done.
Now, talk to me about that, but because I read the graphic novel and I really liked it real well. It brought back a lot of memories to me. The thing I'm really interested in is the fact that these two players basically switch sides. What was it about the story that made you want to do that? Because normally heroes are heroes and villains are villains and they don't really switch. I was just sort of curious, why did you decide to make it that this event would cause such a change in these two people?
Well, one thing we don't talk about when we talk about bad things that happened, like 9/11 and different other tragedies like the Las Vegas tragedy, we normally don't think about the people who survive and the effect it has on them. You know, we remember the people who are gone, which is absolutely an important thing. But the amount of people that suffer because of their losses is 3, 4, 5 times the number of the people who actually were taken. And in this situation, the idea of the effect of their losses on them, I thought was important because there are basically 3 people in this book who have to suffer. And that's the comic book writer, the hero, and the villain. Mm-hmm. And the way they understand their roles and how it changed him was so significant. I wanted to do basically a superhero book, but I wanted to get away with telling the story, which I think I did. I think it's important that we focus on the survivors.
It's really an interesting story. She actually goes through, well, the two of them are actually there when things happen in New York. And what's interesting about it, there was a lot of stuff that really like happened during the event was that people didn't know who survived and who did not. And
yeah, I mean, when we think of 9/11, we think of pins and we think of where we were, but we don't really think about what actually happened and what was taking place at that time. Mm-hmm. And the families that were trying to figure out whether they would find somebody alive, whether they would find something to mourn. Mm-hmm. And very few of those families actually, you know, got what they were looking for. And this was the idea. And I tried to keep as accurate as possible. Mm-hmm. So when we did these scenes dealing with what they call Ground Zero, because they didn't want to call it, you know, the scene. They wanted to talk about, you know, that a tragedy took place here, but not in a way that would affect, you know, make us feel less about it. Mm-hmm. So it was a tough thing. It was a really tough book to write, but at the same time, I thought it was important to do.
Yeah, because, you know, I think even at this date, we're still recovering from this event, and a lot of us are. I mean, I can't go to September 11th without thinking about that day quite a lot. So there's still a lot of us that are still dealing with that whole process. And it's interesting to me because you do refer to a forward in the book where you referred to the fact that Marvel had a Spider-Man book that kind of dealt with it and stuff like that.
Yeah, Amazing Spider-Man, it was the black cover, and it dealt with it, but in a, you know, it really didn't, it was like, what could we have done? Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a great book, and I thought it was a great thing to do, but I didn't feel like the topic really got covered. Mm-hmm. I think it was a great gesture on Marvel's behalf, mm-hmm. but I think there's a huge risk in doing something like what I did, mm-hmm. and you know, for the readers of the book who get a hold of it, they'll understand what I'm talking about.
Now, I have to say, I think you've written yourself into this book, if I'm not mistaken. When the book starts out, there's a guy on a subway saying that he can't believe that the Snowflake has agreed to be interviewed by him. He's a comic book writer. And this writer, although I don't see him named anywhere, he's written the book Horror, which you have written. So one has to assume that this is actually you, although the likeness isn't quite the same, I have to say, as far as that.
No, he looks better than I do.
Oh, does he? Okay.
No, I think everyone has their reason for doing it, and for me, you know, that story that the comic book writer told in the story was my story, mm-hmm. with a little liberties here and there taken. But, you know, when you think of these moments and think about how you felt at the time, you know, I had my own story that haunted me for a bunch of years, and I thought it was important to tell.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting, you bring in some real life things, but you put them in it. For example, President Bush is standing there talking with her. He's got his arm around her, which is not what happened in real life. He had his arm around a police or a fireman.
Yes. Yeah. I replaced the fireman with the superhero.
Yeah. So that was, it's interesting. And of course, as things go along and they start to realize the impact of what happened, the two of them go in different directions, which is kind of interesting. You know.
What I discovered, the funny thing about writing this, and I've written a lot of different graphic novels throughout the years and different single issue books. This was the first book I realized how difficult it is for a villain to become a hero. That it is such a foreign entity to the person that they don't get it. They never that's why they're a villain in the first place. They don't get why people would give away, why people would sacrifice themselves. I mean, it's so easy for a good person to justify bad conduct, but it's the exact opposite for a villain to try to be decent. And it was a very interesting thing. It took him so long to try to find his way. Well, for her, it was really easy. I mean, she went off to the dark side pretty quick. Because all you need to do is feel justified. You killed the person I love. I have a right to be a bad person.
Right.
And the exact opposite happened to him.
Now, several other things take place that are real-life incidents, which kind of grounds the story with us. We're there when Osama bin Laden is killed, and we see people's reactions and stuff like that about it, which is kind of interesting. That's the day when something significant happens with Snowflake, too. I don't know if we want to mention that. I don't want to give away the story.
Well, the idea is people don't, you know, what I tried to do was to be as honest as possible with this book. Try not to pick a side. Try not to get my politics or anybody else's politics involved, but just tell the story from where we live. And the idea that, you know, I once served in the Army a long time ago for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't remember people thanking me for my service and everything else. And that became something that people say now. Mm-hmm. They don't really know what it means. They just kind of Pavlovian, you know, say it. Mm-hmm. And in the scene, there's a scene where the soldier's actually drinking a beer. Mm-hmm. And when Bin Laden gets caught and, mm-hmm. you know, the villain's talking to him, you don't really understand what's going on mm-hmm. until the end of that scene. And I think it's really important to tell things from a place where you can believe it.
Right.
And hopefully I did that here.
Yeah, I think so. Because when I read it, I was very touched by it. And I remembered, you know, like you said, people remember where they were at that time. And I remember where I was when all these particular events happened. And it kind of grounds the whole thing for me. It's so interesting that, you know, the villain becomes a superhero and he actually becomes a superhero we know in the story, which is I found real interesting. And the very last thing we see in the book is a real surprise, because let's just say that Snowflake...
I wouldn't tell it.
Well, Snowflake's doing something that makes sense. And it's not something that I think that we would encourage, but it's something that's really interesting to me. So the whole book to me, it's a very interesting, and I still think that this will help people, you know, start to deal with and continue to deal with, I think is a better way to say it, with all the things that we've lost and all the, how every year the September 11th is a reminder of what we went through. And I just think it's a really well done book. I love the artwork is real good. Mr. Zumel, who you do a lot of books with, did the artwork on it.
Yeah, Federico and I have been working together for about 3.5 years now. Mm-hmm. And he's been a real pleasure to work with because he's easy, mm-hmm. you know, and the creative process is a tough one if you don't have a partnership. Mm-hmm. And he has never once given me one inch of difficulty. It's always been, yeah, no problem. Sure, we'll work around it. We'll do this. Mm-hmm. And it's always nice to be able to deal with somebody who is a professional, who appreciates what he's doing. And Federico has always been that guy with me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's an interesting thing. I mean, when I wrote this book, I wanted it to be one of my typical books that people could read and enjoy, mm-hmm. but I had a dual purpose. I wanted it to matter, mm-hmm. and hopefully it was entertaining, but it also, you know, allowed people to feel a certain way. I've had a lot of first responders read preview copies of the books and, you know, just to make sure, you know, that because I knew certain people were going to be offended by the topic. Mm-hmm. As I said, I felt compelled to write this. This wasn't something that is going to make money. It's not something that's going to be taken to the next level. Mm-hmm. The idea was that I just wanted it to be a really good book that had, you know, a purpose.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I have to say, there's something in the beginning of the book that makes me got to ask you a question. It's called 9/11 Part 1. Do you have other stories that you want to tell in this, let's say, in this universe that's grounded towards ours? Are there other things you want to do with this?
Well, what I'd like to be able to do with this is to allow it to be open-ended. Mm-hmm. In the end, that, let's say we want to keep going in the future and talk about, you know, how it's affected people farther on. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good start. I mean, that's why part one kind of symbolizes is that we're still going through this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that there's no end to it. There's not an end to this story. There's not an end to our story. Mm-hmm. And no, I really just wrote that as, it's funny because I didn't expect most people to catch it.
Okay.
most of the things I do a lot of times kind of sneak under and putting part one on was my way of saying that it's not over for most people.
Mm-hmm. Now, a really interesting thing graphically that I really like is in the title 9/11. The 11 are actually, looks like they're the Twin Towers.
Yeah.
One of them has an antenna sticking up out of it. And then the two of them are right next to each other, which is, you know, the way the Twin Towers were set up. And so when I see that, I thought that was a very creative way to make this, again, to ground it in what we know happened on that day. Did you come up with that? Did the designer do that for you? How'd that happen?
That was my colorist, James Brown, and Francesco and I were trying to find, you know, an idea of how it worked. And I'm fortunate to collaborate with some really great artists. And the idea came, and then suddenly we said, what it'll look like. When we devise a cover, for example, like the cover you're looking at, mm-hmm. went through like a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. You know, you had the villain with his head down, you had the hero with her head up, mm-hmm. you know, like crying to God.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's, you got to have a purpose behind some of this stuff, even though most people won't care. Mm-hmm. I think it's unbelievably important to get it right. Mm-hmm. And that's what we do with our books now. All of our books have that. There's so many things hidden in the books mm-hmm. that people come up to me and they go, oh, did this mean something? I kind of laugh. And I'm going, yeah, that was about this. That was about that. That was about my autistic son. That was about my daughter. Mm-hmm. It follows the motto of our company, which is publishing with purpose. Mm-hmm. And even though we're not doing monthly books, mm-hmm. doing 3 or 4 graphic novels a year, mm-hmm. I believe is what we want to give out to the world. Mm-hmm. And enough people enjoy it that it allows us to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. Which is great. Now, what day did you say this is coming out? Specifically, which Wednesday?
This book should ship in less than 3 weeks. We just got it in from China. So it's going to hit Diamond. Be shipped to Diamond, so probably about around the third week of January, probably.
Okay, so something to keep your eye out for.
If your store ordered it. If not, send us, we'll try to get it to you. The problem is that if your store doesn't order it, the likelihood of you getting it is very slim, mm-hmm. Unless you are able to get hold of us. Because, mm-hmm. Even though, for example, in August, we had 2 of our books in the top 10, mm-hmm. You're talking a couple thousand copies. Mm-hmm. That's not enough for, when you think of a single issue of, let's say, G.I. Joe has 5,000 copies. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's difficult. But I think once people get into their hands, there'll be an appreciation for what we tried to do.
Well, let's say they don't get a hold of it. Can they get a hold of you to get a copy of this?
They can go to our Facebook page, Big City Comics, mm-hmm. or they can go to info@bigcitycomics.com mm-hmm. and email us through there. We'll always figure out how to get your books.
Okay.
Even though I have an unbelievable respect for retailers, if mm-hmm. you can't get it from them, we'll find a way to get your copies.
Well, today there's so many books out there, it's hard to order everything. You can't yep. possibly get it all. So the thing to do is, if there's something you want and you can't get it through your store, then the thing to do is to go through the creators. And you do a lot of conventions. I saw you in New York. I see you in I'm trying to think of ones you don't go to. I think you go to San Diego, if I remember correctly.
I try to keep it down because, for example, like right after we get off the phone, I've got to knock out about, 10, 15 pages.
Mm.
Because the process takes time and effort.
Right.
For example, I start off the year at MegaCon in mm-hmm. May.
Okay.
And I know that sounds a little silly to start off in May, mm-hmm. but we get probably 1 to 2 of our graphic novels done in that period of time, mm-hmm. because what will happen is then there's MegaCon, and then there's San Diego, mm-hmm. and then there's Tampa and mm-hmm. Dragon Con and mm-hmm. New York. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly the year is coming to an end. And if I could try to explain what it takes, the process of handling almost every aspect of putting these books together, mm-hmm. it'll crush you. But you want to get these books out in time.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you got to travel. You got to arrange to have booths at places. You got to do all these kinds of things.
Booths, T-shirts. I mean, I'm not the artist, so
right.
I sell books by the pound. So what happens is San Diego, for example, will ship conservatively 700-800 pounds
wow.
to the convention center. And then we got to ship, a certain amount of the booth setup back.
Right.
And then the same with New York and Atlanta. We're fortunate. We drive from Orlando there.
Right.
But it's a lot to do. But it's really strange because I sell so many more books at conventions than I do through retailers. I mean, it's not unusual for us to sell 500, 600, 700 books.
Wow.
And that's a great number.
Now, I saw you too at I saw you at Acme Comics. They had like a little convention. You were there, which I got a chance to access some of your books, which was great. So I guess it kind of depends on the store or the location.
Well, it was a favor. It was I did a favor because Acme is a great store, and mm-hmm. they asked me to come in mm-hmm. about 2 weeks ago, and I said sure. I mean, I try to stay away from because it's so hard to do a convention. I mean, I stand there for 10 hours mm-hmm. for 4 days. I mean, I don't sit down. I don't mm-hmm. I don't leave the booth. Mm-hmm. It's important for me to. Because what happens is sometimes when people come to see you mm-hmm. and that minute you were in the bathroom, believe it or not, people get really upset when they're mm-hmm. not able to have you sign the books. And I get it.
Yeah.
So I try to get around that. People the convention we just did.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember eating. I don't think I ate from setup till when we left around 4.
I'll tell you a really quick story at New York. We were at New York, and I help out with Stabby Bunny and Richard Vera, the creator, and he was there almost the entire weekend at the booth. The one time on Sunday, he decided to go to the restroom. That's when one of the guys from bleedingcool.com came by. And luckily I was there and I gave him copies of the book. And, you know, what happened was he listed it of the top 109 things that were at New York Comic Con that year. Number 9 was Stabbity Bunny was the best named comic in the place. And thankfully I was there to be able to give him copies and talk with him a little bit. And Richard was still so mad that he missed that person.
But, well, be mad when you miss the Sony exec.
Yeah.
I mean, that's worse. That was the, when a buddy came by, the guy, oh, you missed Sony was just here. I was like, I'm sorry, what? And that happened at Comic-Con, like, I think it was 9 years ago. And I never, from then on, you know, I'm always within an eye shot of the booth.
Yeah.
In fact, my booth at Comic-Con, the bathroom is literally through the door.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes me less than probably a minute and a half. so if somebody stops, I think I'm good with that.
You learned your lesson.
Yeah.
I'm going to turn you that. Well, 9/11, it's 9/11, and it's a subtitled a graphic novel. Big City Comic Studio is the place to get it. And again, if they don't have it at your store, they probably could back order it, I would imagine.
Yeah, they can order it through Diamond.
Yeah, they could get that. And so that'll help to get it. If you absolutely cannot get it, then, you know, Big City Comics on Facebook or through the website would be the way to go with that.
It's weird. That's like our 11th graphic novel. Mm. And I remember when it all started off with, like, Terminal Alice, and it was horror. Then it was Angel Falling. Mm-hmm. Then it was Gabriel Tempest and Bayou Bound. And, you know, it's so strange that when somebody buys one of the books and they can never find the other ones, and at a convention, they'll buy all 11 of them from you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a nice compliment when that happens.
Oh, yeah, if they like your stuff. You know, they can't get enough of them, seems like.
Which is good. It's a
now,
lot of fun.
I want to end up with Killing Mars, because that has a lot of important stuff going on with it. But I thought before we got to there, we'd talk about Scary Fails.
Tesla and Hyde Scary Fails. It's about Nikola Tesla and Edward Hyde. They're 28 years old and they live in Vegas and they hunt what I call the lies, which are the fake fairy tales.
Mm-hmm. These were individual issues, weren't they, before they were collected?
What we do is, one of the things we do for conventions for collectibility is we'll do a first issue comic book.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the graphic novel next.
Mm-hmm.
So at conventions, you'll get the first issue.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was originally the idea was that we would do single issue comic books. And then I just realized I don't really like writing like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like handing you the full book.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
when you get the full graphic novel, this one's 110 pages. So it's like reading a 5-issue miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wouldn't mind doing it for, let's say, like a Spider-Man or a Superman. Mm-hmm. But for what the kind of stuff I do, it just makes sense for me to write the whole story. So Scary Fails wrote itself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, writing for Nikola Tesla was a really cool thing to be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
And people loved it. So I was like, okay, cool.
Mm-hmm. And it's a great story. It's got all kinds of interesting little stuff. And, of course, it's your friend, the artist is back with you again.
In Federico.
Yeah, he's back doing stuff again. He has a very realistic, kind of grounded style that's really interesting to me. I like it. It's a little grainy at times and very
– yeah.
I guess the coloring's a little darker, too, because it's a – you know, you're dealing with a very dark situation. And it's really – but it's very well done. And, of course, you pace it real well, and the characters are very vibrant. So it's a tough book to put down once you get started, I have to say.
Well, you know the twist. I can't help but give you the twist ending at all the end of the books.
Okay.
So it's always fun for me to give you the slap at the end, because I think the ending's serious. And what's funny is I've never done this before, but I when I finished that, I wrote directly through to Volume 2.
Mm.
So Volume 2 will come out in August of Scary Fails, just in time for us to give a Comic-Con preview.
Right.
And where our horror book that we're working on called Roulette should be out in September.
Okay.
So it's been a busy year, you know, but... You know, the idea is that you just want to put out good stuff.
And you have a real life job besides doing all the comics and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I you know, it's, you try to fit the dream in.
Yeah, and family and stuff like that too. So, you know, the fact that you can squish all this together is just amazing to me. I
have a wife and two kids, and my son, Jakey, he's on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So, him and I spend a ridiculous amount of time together.
Oh, good.
He changes the way I look at things. Which is always an amazing thing.
Now, Scary Fails. This is also a Big City Studio comic studio book. Can you order this through Diamond as well?
Yeah, you can order it through Diamond, or you can go to the Big City Comics and get it from there. I mean, what I'm discovering now, and it's very weird, because somebody will say, listen, I want all 8 books, and then I'll get some PayPal request for like $80 for 10 of the books. And I'm like, for 8 of the books. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's just, and I'll sign all of them, and I'll, and normally I always throw in like these special things because they, because in a weird way, every once in a while, I'm the one who has to ship them. And I'll go, hey, throw this in just for fun. And they always go, what's that book? I said, well, actually, that was the first book I ever wrote. And they go, that was so cool. And so you never know. They're kind of like prize packages. You never know what's inside of them.
Cool. Well, that, of course, that's all the more reason to buy them.
Yeah.
Now, I want to wrap up, of course, with Killing Mars, because Killing Mars is an unusual thing. I talked with you before one time, and I remember specifically you saying you don't like to write sequels.
Hate it. Yeah, so, hate it with a passion.
So along comes Killing Mars. Talk about what Killing Mars is all about.
I had done my first book, graphic novel, was called Terminal Alice, which was about 5 female contract killers, Alex, Laura, Lanny, Karen, Eve. Mm-hmm. Each had $1 million on their head. They were only together they get it off. Mm-hmm. And then I followed that up with Whore, which is about Jacob Mars, who gets downsized from the CIA, except he owes $100,000 of alimony and bills. Mm-hmm. Now, that book was just out there, and people loved that book, and it was just insane, and I didn't think I could do better. Mm-hmm. And my colorist, James Brown, who does G.I. Joe and Transformers for IDW, was like, Jeff, you know, why don't you do the sequel? I said, I can't do the sequel. He goes, why not? I said, because I got to make sure it's better. And he said, well, make it better then. And it was hard for me to argue with that because it was like kind of challenge accepted. And I said, well, let me try. I'll write the first 10 pages. And writing Jacob Mars makes me laugh like every page because he's an obscene human being, and the stuff he does and the situations he in is the most absurd stuff I could write, but for some reason it feels absolutely real. And I just, the idea of forcing these 5 female contract killers to have to put up with his nonsense was perfect. And when I got to the end of it, there wasn't a part of it I didn't like. And normally I'm very critical of what I did, but I was laughing through it. I was laughing the effect on the characters, how it felt, all the different crazy jobs. I mean, he's got to be a furry at Comic-Con. I mean, just this insanity of this guy's life that I didn't think I could top. Because in the first book, I mean, come on, he's playing one-on-one with Obama. I mean, there were some weird scenes in Horde that I didn't think I could ever beat, but I think this book did it. And I don't know if you read it or not, but I think it did.
Yes, well, I have to say, right off the bat, you do when he's on an airplane.
Yeah.
Stuff happens there that shocked me. You know, I have never seen this kind of a story before, and I won't spoil it here, but just in the first few pages, I was very surprised. My jaw dropped open when I saw what was going on the airplane with them. I mean, I was startled. I mean, the stuff that I can't even begin to try to describe it because I'll spoil it if I do.
Don't even try.
Stuff happens and it changes what happens in the book. There's a result that carries on into the rest of the story, which I really like, which, of course, helps, you know, Mars is a crazy guy. And the fact that he does what he does even is something of a surprise to me. But I, the way that things go forward with him is just, you know, then, of course, when he meets up with the group of gals and they have to go doing things, everything's a lot more complicated than he would like it to be.
Yeah, the gay porn parody Talanueva that I thought was kind of funny. I was trying to think, one of the killers is a nun. Yeah. So I thought, what would be the worst job she had to do with Mars? And I was thinking a gay porn parody would have to be it. And I thought, I loved the way she just sat there and was just so offended and disgusted. And, you know, Mars is normally the one I like to say about Jacob Mars that his dignity isn't for sale, but it's clearly for rent. And I wanted to have all these 5 women have to go through that. I wanted him to bring them down to his level. And I think in the most part they did that. But at the same time, I thought the story had a movement kind of like the first 2 books did.
Right.
And, you know, people asked me all the time when they read it, they were going, oh my God, this would have made a Terminal House would have been a great graphic novel. I'm going, well, it was. Here, you can buy that too if you like. So you didn't have to, you never had to read the first 2 books to get into it. There were so many, the absurdity. I mean, there are some inside jokes dealing with Comic-Con because he gets to go to Comic-Con in San Diego, which I thought was kind of funny.
That's punishment.
I'm going to Comic-Con, Biatch.
That's right. That's punishment for you right there.
Yeah. Yeah. They read a little different, huh, when you go from 9/11 to Mars, huh?
Well, that's the thing. I never know what kind of story you're going to tell. Wow. You know, and I like that. There's not many writers who can write a variety of tales, of stories. People like Westerns, or some people who like crime dramas, some people like superheroes. I can't find many people like you who excel at doing all the different kinds of stories, which is, to me, you know, I just think that's wonderful stuff. I wish, you know, that more people were able to write the stories like you do.
Well, you got to believe it. It's not, I have a rule. If I see it, if I can't see it, I can't sell it. Mm-hmm. And when I'm writing my stories, if I can't feel them mm-hmm. on my face when I'm typing or when I'm just envisioning what they're going through, mm-hmm. I can't do it. That's why space is always hard for me. Mm-hmm. Space is a difficult topic for me to write, and period pieces are hard too. Mm-hmm. But, you know, other things like, you know, whether it be a children's book or you know, a superhero book or, mm-hmm. or what I love doing is, you know, the regular people. Mm-hmm. As long as I can see it, I can write it. When I can't see it, I just don't even try.
So could you do a superhero book?
Oh, yeah. I love that. Superheroes, to me, the idea of writing Superman or Spider-Man, they've never really put these people in where they should be. I mean, the fact is, Superman, I would love the conversation between Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent at a bar, mm-hmm. where Bruce says to him, listen, what are you doing? You know, I know this Clark Kent guy means a lot to you, but he's going to be gone in 20 years. You can't be a 60-year-old Clark Kent. You know, you don't age. You know, you have to start thinking about who you want to be for the future, who you want to be friends with, what you mm-hmm. want to understand. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see him try to build relationships with other heroes mm-hmm. and try to figure out, you know, what he's going to be like in 100 years, because he's going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the one thing. I mean, other than Wonder Woman and some other characters, you know, he's going to watch everybody he loves die.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I love that aspect.
Yeah, and I got to ask you, of course, killing Mars, you swore you wouldn't do, and you did it. Yeah. Are there any more? Because the ending of the book is quite hilarious. And I cannot.
I love that. I love the end. The endings have to be the best, or you shouldn't even try.
Well, the ending was made me laugh out loud. So I got to ask, you know, if you didn't think you could do Killing Mars, but you did it, and you did it real well, do we have more of these kinds of things with these people?
See, that's unfair. It's really unfair. What happens is I have these stories that want to be told, and they're in the back of my head. Mm-hmm. And I get it. Okay, this one's in the shoot next. Mm-hmm. And like the next book I'm doing is called Schizo. Mm-hmm. And I've had the story in my head forever about a guy who talks to ghosts, but he has to pretend he's psychic mm-hmm. so that people don't think he's crazy. Mm-hmm. And it was such a fun story that I want to tell it. Then I had the next one that I want to tell mm-hmm. called Nightingale. Mm-hmm. Well, when they say, well, we need the sequel to this, it means I've got to mm-hmm. put something else I want to really write on the back burner.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. while I love writing Mars, I love new people. I grew up on Stephen King.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, he didn't do sequels.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he does them now, but, mm-hmm. you know, you were talking story after story after story that was so great in a row. Mm-hmm. Christine, The Stand, all these fantastic books where the characters, you could tell it had his flavor, but they were absolutely different characters. And mm-hmm. I think he inspired me to write the way I do. Mm-hmm. Or maybe we're sick in the same way. I don't know.
Well, I have to say that, you know,
you want more Mars. That's the problem.
Of course,
everyone wants more Mars.
Well,
I'm so offended. Where's the next book?
Mars is such a great character, and the whole thing that goes on and the way it wraps up, the door is open in my mind for other stuff.
The question is, how good did you like the scene in Thailand where they're running the gauntlet? Was that fun?
That was wonderful. That was terrific.
Oh, I so badly wanted to see that in a movie someday.
Yeah.
That was such a great line. Laura being the psychotic woman who being the you know, she thinks that a 16th century Shakespearean prostitute is doing mm-hmm. all the killing for her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love that character so much that the idea of you know, who really is the baddest person in the house out of all the women. Who is the most deadly? Who is the most dangerous?
Mm-hmm.
And when you get to really see Laura do what she does,
mm-hmm.
it's frightening.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. I love a strong woman character that mm-hmm. doesn't come off as this, you know, even though she says some really wimpy things,
mm-hmm.
she is scary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I love that. Mm-hmm. I love a scary woman mm-hmm. in a comic book because they're not the victims.
Right.
You know, they're the ones that you need to be afraid of. And that's, I don't know. That's just who I am.
Because, see, strong women to me, I mean, I've for decades been reading strong male leads for, you know, as long as I've been reading comics. The first one I ever read was Batman, of course, and he's still my favorite to this day. But Bruce Wayne and Lester, because his last name is my first name, I always like to say. So that was one of the things that I hooked onto with him. But the thing of it is with female characters now, I think the door is wide open, because for the longest time, women were stuck in these little roles. I still have female friends who want to say that a woman lead character should be maternal in nature. They should never fight.
Some are,
but not only that. They say if somebody isn't that, then that's a woman with
a man being a woman.
Yes.
A woman. Yeah.
That's
I
a
mean,
good
when
way
you
to
think
it,
of
yeah.
Laura, for example, Laura yeah. takes this baby.
Yeah.
And like, oh, this is my baby. This is it. It
yeah.
doesn't mean she's not evil as hell and can kill somebody.
Right.
It means that she does have these maternal instincts the minute she sees the baby.
Right.
But she's frightening.
Right.
And a lot of people, when they write women, they don't, it's because they can't empathize with women.
Yeah.
And my fear is this, and I think we're going in a weird direction in comic books.
Mm.
And I'm glad that I get to do what I do, because nobody basically gets to tell me that I can't do something.
Mm.
And you know, if it's believable, I'll write it. I just don't go, okay, here, let's cut off somebody's penis. I mean, that's silly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has to fit in. It has to be part of the story.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, people are so locked down. Oh, a woman can't get hit in
right.
a book.
Right.
And I'm going, well, these are heroes, and these are strong, powerful women who fight.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to get hit ever.
Mm.
I mean, I think that is the worst form of, you know, chauvinism that you can, by saying that your female characters can't take a punch or give a punch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just I'm glad I've been sooner or later, I'm going to write some book for DC or Marvel, and they'll go, isn't that the guy who wrote Whore? And I'll say, you're damn right, I wrote Whore, and I love the hell out of every page of it. And it had a point to it. And mm-hmm. I believe Jacob Mars. And, you know, when you talk about killing Mars mm-hmm. and that you want to see more,
mm-hmm.
you're not alone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely not a mainstream book.
No. No.
I mean, how badly can I offend people? Like my colorist, Jim, he always says, Jim will call me back, are you insane? And I'll laugh. And I'll go, did you love it? He goes, yeah, I loved it. But we were not getting away with it. And we get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think once people realize that you're writing not to shock people, mm-hmm. but you're writing to entertain,
mm-hmm.
there are two different things.
Yes. Well, the cover, let's say, for example, there's naked Mars standing there surrounded by women. And the as they call the juicy bits, are covered by something.
Bible.
Yes, the Bible is what's covering it. And I remember looking at it and going like, well, that's different.
And nobody had a problem with that cover, believe it or not. The original Mars cover where he's wrapped in naked women, everyone had a problem with. But that the nun was holding the Bible, shielding the guy's penis, was absolutely okay. I've been told that was the most offensive cover they've ever seen. Oh, I'm offended. These were the three smallest-breasted women you'll ever see on a comic book. And everyone was so offended. But this book, it's okay to hide his junk with a Bible.
Yeah.
So we live in such a double standard world where everyone's so offended, and you just got to get over it.
See, I hope we're going to come out of this phase right now where we're so offended by everything around us that we can actually kind of laugh at those kinds of things instead of being offended by it. But we'll see. I mean, I don't know. This could go on for a long time.
I mean, some of the best entertainment we get right now, mm-hmm. some of the greatest movies I've seen,
mm-hmm.
whether it be a Tarantino movie or something that is so fringy that you just love, like the original Kevin Smith stuff, like Clerks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you watch that, how offensive was that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
we were listening. My wife was watching Clerks 2 with me,
mm-hmm.
and everything that came out of this one guy's mouth
mm-hmm.
was so offensive, and she was so mad.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like laughing, going, you know, this is people like this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think once people get over being offended
mm-hmm.
And sit down and enjoy that a character can act a certain way
mm-hmm.
and that it's not saying that it's okay, but it's mm-hmm. saying that this is who this person is,
right.
I think we'll be fine with it all.
I hope so. I don't know if we're there. It's going to be a while before we get there, but I think we're going to. So you were talking about a couple of projects that you've got coming. Again, let's wrap up Killing Mars, though. Is this available through Diamond now, or is this one
yeah,
coming
out? Yeah, Killing Mars came out in September. They
okay.
have your store probably has some books. If
okay.
they don't, figure it out. I mean, I love Killing Mars.
Mm-hmm.
Killing Mars just makes me laugh.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a funny book for me.
Mm-hmm.
And people, you know, it's like you go, well, can you give me more Mars?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
and technically I've given you two graphic novels. I mean, that's a pretty lot for, you know, a single character.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
at the same time, you know, yeah, it's funny, you know, if you've read my books, you'll know that I'll throw a character in every once in a while
mm-hmm.
that you'll have seen from a past book as like a gift
mm-hmm.
to go, oh, I get to see him again.
Mm-hmm.
So Mars actually pops up in a book that we're doing, but I'm not going to tell you which one because
okay.
it's a kick in the face at the end of one of the books.
Okay.
But yeah, Morris comes back for a visit. Mm-hmm. I'm doing right now a book called Schizo, mm-hmm. which is, like I said, he gets drafted into the military because they see him rob this building, mm. and they can't figure, they really think he's psychic because the ghosts are telling him which directions to go in, mm. and how to avoid security. Mm-hmm. And he would have told them, except the last time he told somebody he saw a ghost, his mother stuck him in a mental hospital. So he basically hides it, and they fill him in. Mm-hmm. So he's a pathfinder in the, you know, in the military for about 8 years, and that's where it starts off. But then he gets basically drafted, sent back to New York, mm-hmm. where, believe it or not, they make him an attorney. And he's a mob attorney.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It's very funny to see see how he deals with that.
You always go directions I can never figure you're going to go. You try to be
cool about it. You try mm-hmm. to give people something that they haven't seen before in mm-hmm. a way that they can believe it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love about it. So even though you'll want the sequel, mm-hmm. I promise you, you'll read this one. You go, oh, that was good. Mm-hmm. Rather than go, I wish he would have gave me more Mars. And every time somebody tries to go in a different direction just mm-hmm. for the sake of going in that direction, mm-hmm. I think that's a failure. I write because I have to write it, not because I think it's a cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's like with the 9/11 book, I didn't have a choice. It was going to get written sooner or later.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, cool. And it came out, and it probably won't sell as well as A Killing Mars does.
Mm-hmm.
But think of the effect. Do you remember it?
Yes.
And that's really the goal to a comic book or a graphic novel. If you can remember a moment or a scene, mm-hmm. that's a big deal, because when I read books, it really has to be a big deal for me to remember it.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the stuff I read, it just follows a basic pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Kick, fight, work, win.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And that's, I tried to avoid that. But I mean, when you read 9/11 and there was a scene at the end where you're going, wow, I bet you could probably remember 4 or 5 scenes in that book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, compare that to what you read normally. If I gave you a copy of, let's say, I'm not saying a Batman or a Spider-Man, mm-hmm. and I said, hey, that 5th issue you read a month ago, do you remember it? You go, I forgot who the villain was. Oh, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't remember it. Though. And that's what I think should be remembered. I mean, mm-hmm. I would love to write a comic for DC and have somebody come up to me and go, you know that scene where Superman had to acknowledge that, you know, he might outlive people.
Mm-hmm.
It made me sad.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when people say LOL, they mm-hmm. don't, normally they're not laughing out loud.
Mm-mm.
You know, but when mm-hmm. people come to me later and they say, God, that book cut me up. And I'm going, mm-hmm. you know how hard it is to make somebody laugh with a comic book?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that so much.
That's great. Well, you do a great job with it. So, okay, Schizo, any idea when that's going to hit?
Okay, well, let's give you the next books out. Liar. Mm-hmm. Is in February's preview guide. Liar's about a 22-year-old kid who tells 50 lies a day to keep his family alive.
Okay.
He's actually an agent for the Freemasons. And has to do a lot. Yeah, I call him the MacGyver of manipulation. It's a 100-page graphic novel that ships in April, but you can order it in February.
Okay.
The next book after that is Scary Fails Volume 2, which comes out, which has a great new villain. Mm. And then you have Roulette is my horror book. Mm-hmm. It's my first horror book. I figured I killed 82 people in Terminal Alice. I could kill 9. 9 would be pretty easy. But 9 mm-hmm. leaves you kind of psychotic when you're killing for just the sense of killing.
Mm.
It's not, it, you don't feel right once you're finished.
Right.
And then the book I'm working on now, Schizo, mm-hmm. will ship in November.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little busy.
Cool. And then you got this other one, Nightingale, you mentioned too, is coming down.
Yeah, Nightingale comes out afterwards. We're actually, I don't normally do this, but the person I collaborate, my colorist, Jim Brown, he's like, Jeff, you know, Nightingale's such a great book. You think you can do, you know, pull it off where you do two at the same time?
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird. I can do that. Mm-hmm. I normally don't like to,
mm-hmm.
but it just requires me to be a little nuttier than I normally am.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So.
I'd ask you where you get your stories from, but I don't know if I want to know.
No, it's not. I remember watching this for, I'm a little old, so mm-hmm. there was a singer named Lionel Richie,
mm-hmm.
and I watched him do this hour-long interview,
mm-hmm.
and they asked him the same question.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought of it like he did.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, I sit down at the piano,
mm-hmm.
and I go somewhere,
mm-hmm.
and I bring it back with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens with me.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go somewhere and I bring it back. It's like I go on this weird vacation in the back of my head,
mm-hmm.
and the very weird thing is when I read it, like a month later, I'll be, you know, like 8 months later when they'll be editing the book, I'll go, where the hell did that come from? and I laugh, and I don't, it's because it's the first time I heard the joke too. I didn't really think about the joke when I wrote it. It just came to me.
It flowed.
It's stories have always, since I was a kid, have come to me where I see it and I write it. I don't claim to be, you know, when I see, like, for example, who's the guy who writes Sherlock? Moffat?
Stephen Moffat.
Yeah, I feel like an absolute idiot when I watch that show. I feel my writing ability is zero when I watch it. When I listen to that dialogue and I watch the flow and I go, that's just brilliant. And then I realize, I said, we're different. You know, we tell different stories. We're different storytellers. And I guess I have to accept that certain people are brilliant. And, you know, some people look at what I do and they go, I don't know where the hell that came from, Jeff. And I go, you know, okay.
Well, it's all great stuff. Every time I read it, I'm surprised. I don't have any idea where you're going to go, and you always end up on a good note and something that you're, like you said, is very memorable. So I encourage people, if you haven't read any of Jeff's stuff, now's the time to get in it, because you're already late, so you got to get to the party.
The show will always continue. It's okay.
Yeah, well, anyway, it's Big City Comics Studio. And it's in the previews. And if you can't do it, get to Big City Comics. Is it BigCityComicsStudio.com or BigCityComics.com?
BigCityComics.com. Okay, you can get there through it.
That's long enough, probably.
And it's better to put on Facebook. And if you want to message me through the Facebook page, it's a lot easier.
Very cool.
And believe it or not, I will get back to you.
Oh, boy.
Some people don't. I do it all the time.
Oh, great. And, of course, the next convention will be MegaCon, the way you were talking
MegaCon.
About.
MegaCon in San Diego. I'm actually almost as proud of my booth setups as I am of my new books that I get there. It's a weird situation.
Well, it's all great stuff, Jeff, and keep it up, because, you know, I've known you for a while now, and I never can figure out what you're going to do next, which is a great thing. I love that so much in stuff that I read. So please keep it up, and I can't wait for 9/11 to come out and see people's reaction.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, too.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne, as a man. From flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's a wrap for this week's episode. Be back next week when there'll be plenty more to talk about in the comics universes. But until then, keep reading your comics.